I think being able to be uncomfortable and getting used to being uncomfortable is so essential to anything in this work, right? Like me having to like unlearn certain things that I were taught that were rooted in anti-Blackness, other issues, it made me very uncomfortable. I was very frustrated because I was like, I'm Abby, I know everything. Like, I don't, obviously. And like, I am constantly still unlearning things and learning new things. I have people that challenge me on my views every day of the week. And, you know, if they're from the right lens, right, especially if they're Black, especially if they're women or femmes, I can understand that, okay, they're telling me something. What is this rooted in that I need to get uncomfortable with? And like, how can I unearth that and like kill it?
Greetings, Unhidden Voices family. Welcome to season 2, episode 2. I know you're going to enjoy this conversation. I sat down with Abiola, a designer, an artist, a political strategist, and a mental health consultant. Abiola just graduated, so congratulations again to her. She also just launched a new design line, so check that out at shopruthann.com. We at Unhidden Voices have also launched a new website, and so I want you to check that out and learn a little bit more about our work. You will also see we have new merch that's up that you can purchase and support us. And please just continue to listen, learn, and amplify with us. So this is exciting. I'm really happy to meet you. I think some congratulations are in order because you just graduated, right?
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, that's awesome and so exciting. So there's so much. I've been, you know, checking out your website and you're, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to order some of that jewelry. And I want to talk to you about like fashion and mental health and the work you're doing in addressing, you know, systemic racism. So there's a lot that you have going on. So, but before we get started, I think it, you know, for our audience, it'd be great for you to just tell us just a little bit about yourself because you have such an interesting story.
Thank you. My name is Abiola Goro. I'm 23. I just graduated from Boston University, as Dr. Amina said. I have in the past done work in quite a different few areas. So I do social justice work, I've done political consulting. I do what I call racial justice education, which is like my favorite thing in the world. But I'm also a fashion designer, and I do some other artsy fartsy fun stuff on the side. So I like to be a little bit everywhere.
And that's what I think is so fascinating. First of all, you started designing when you were 9 years old.
Yeah. Right? I started off making jewelry, actually. I made like really complex pieces with like super cool materials. We would go to like these big gem and jewelry shows and like source for like, you know, these handmade beads. It was a really beautiful thing.
And then you're doing that, and you're also a leader for the NAACP on chapter. So can you explain like how does all these things come together for you?
Yeah, I'll give like a brief run through that I think will help. So I launched my first business at 9 with my mom. She helped me to market my stuff. I handmade jewelry and accessories. And so I would make like elaborate jewelry pieces. I did that for a minute before transitioning into retail and resale. And then later on, I transitioned to having my own store in high school. And then after that, it's funny because I kind of regressed backwards because I ended up going to be a mobile store instead because I liked being able to do pop-up shops. So I would like take the summer and I would just like go everywhere across the country and like sell clothes and travel with them. Wow. I ended up basically going backwards and going back to making everything. So I started making, went to retail, and then went back to making. I learned how to sew. And then I recently relaunched my new clothing line that is handmade accessories and handmade clothing. It's a little bit ballsy.
Yes, it is. And beautiful. And wait, is Ruth Ann is the name of your, because I saw Style by Abiola, but now I clicked on, you had a new website that launched, so Ruth Ann, right?
Okay. Style by Ola was what I originally launched my clothing under, but it's transitioning into like this really odd, funky thing I'm really excited about because basically I did styling services with it, but people ended up asking me to like help them find wholesalers or to help them build their business. So I did like business classes. I taught people how to do what I do. So I taught people how to sew, how to make t-shirts, how to source for like all these different things, ethical sourcing. And so I am now transitioning Style by Ola into actually being like a full-blown like creative hub. So instead of it being my namesake brand, it will be me giving you the opportunity to either sell your clothes through my site. So I'll be doing boutiques for other people, helping them get their businesses up and growing. I will also be able to source models. I'll be able to source production, just making it like this hub, I think, of everything I've been doing.
Yes. But just
a rightful place. And then Ruth Ann is just clothing and accessories. That's all it is.
Okay.
So simplified. Based on my grandmother, which I think really makes me feel really good. And it just gives me a beautiful thing that I think I have now to kind of honor her.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I really find lovely is just centering Black women in our histories and our, you know, focusing on our ancestral stories. And I loved the richness of your work also because you like this, you know, you have the Nina Simone and Diana and then your grandmother, and it just feels so warm, just, you know, very lovely, just seeing that. So I'd like to have you kind of talk about your inspiration, like what inspires you?
Yeah, thanks for catching on to that. It makes me so happy. Basically, and it's kind of a whirlwind. So like I said, Styled by Ola was my namesake, but it started becoming more, and it just was like becoming this whole thing, and it still is, and I'm very proud of it. But I felt like it didn't embody exactly what I wanted for a clothing brand. It embodied what I wanted for, I think, all the other facets, but it didn't like give the punch that I needed. So when I was doing and like collecting all these pieces, I started making pieces like a year ago, and I was like, I'm just gonna hold these for something great that's coming. I've always been absolutely obsessed with the 70s, like obsessed. I grew up like watching, listening, just like engulfing 70s culture, right? Like I can sing you like all the Parliament Funkadelic albums.
I definitely saw that, caught that vibe, the you know, the lush, the richness, the kind of over the topness of the furs and the, the hats, like all that stuff. Yeah.
There's so much to it. And like, I think because I was also raised by like a lot of like 60, 70, 80, 90 year olds that I just was always like around that energy, that culture. And I don't know, like something just hit me at the beginning of this year. And I was like, I'm gonna launch a brand. I was like, and the first thing out of the first set that we're gonna release is gonna be all 70s. I was like, because this is the best thing I've ever seen. I was like, and I realized anytime you talk about the 70s to people, if they're not like Black and older, they don't really understand what it meant, I think, and like what it did for like everything else that came after it. Yeah. Most people, when you mention 70s, like joke about like hippies and like, like, you know, like these typical, like that 70s show, like things that are, I think, very whitewashed. Yeah. And I was like, no, like the 70s was like the shit. Like, excuse my language.
That's
like,
not good.
Literally, it took Blackness for Black people, and it democratized it. It literally made Blackness accessible. It's the first time we're seeing regular Black people on TV. We're seeing Black poor people on TV, Black rich people. We're seeing a mix of these life experiences. We're seeing androgynous icons. We're seeing things being challenged as masculine and feminine. Yeah. You have like Isaac Hayes, who is like the ultimate embodiment of like fighting like what is masculine and feminine, in my opinion, because everything he does is just so cool. Yeah. And so after I was thinking all of this, I was like, okay, I'm gonna release a brand with this. I was like, what do I call it? And I realized I always used to hide my middle name from people because it felt like a secret to me, like a good secret. Like it felt like it was something that kept me connected to my grandmother. So my grandmother's name was Annie Ruth, but my mom thought it was too country. So she said Ruth Ann, and that cuter version. And my grandmother loved it. She was like, that's great. And she passed away when I was younger, but every memory I have of her is literally being able to just like be this rough and tough, like badass woman. Like she would curse somebody out, and like in the same breath, she would turn around and give you the biggest kiss. And she taught me how to do so much, I think, when it comes to standing up for myself. I've been coming into a phase of like relearning myself, relearning how to love myself, and like reowning who I am. And so as soon as that hit me, I was like, I have to name this after her. I was like, you know, it'll be my version of the name that my mom created, which she loved, like I said, but I have to do it in her spirit, because like, I'm tired of doing, I think, what I felt like I'm supposed to do with my fashion.
Yeah.
And like, I want to release a brand where like, I can have curse words on the website and nobody's going to be shocked. I can like, do things from a really edgy perspective. And like, I want to make things sustainable. Like my grandmother was so big about reusing things. Oh my gosh. She found ways to reuse nail polish. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. So
how do you go about that?
Just throw it away, you know, like when it gets messed up, she would find a way to like mix it with other nail polishes.
Okay.
Throw the bottle away. She just did like these things that I think like Black people in certain communities have always done to just mm-hmm. save things and reuse and like be conscious.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm, you know, all these other brands that call themselves sustainable, a lot of them are just like very basic, very simple. Mm-hmm. They have sustainability in like a really inaccessible way. Yeah. As I'm trying to be more sustainable in my personal practices, I figured why not take some of the things she taught me as well and like redefine what a sustainable brand is. It doesn't have to be, you know, random thrifted pieces, right? I can take dead stock fabric. I can reuse it in beautiful ways. I can cut up denim pants. The next drop I have, it's going to be so cool with the denim. I'm so excited. Denim.
Oh,
pants.
Wow.
You know, I just like do all these things. So I've been talking for a second, but it's just been like, I think one of the most exciting things I've done in a while. And it just feels really good because it feels really true and authentic.
You know, one of the things that you said was how you have sort of been focusing on yourself and like loving yourself and appreciating your art in these very rich ways. And I'm wondering how that connects to your work in mental health and your idea of mental health. And can you talk a little bit more about the connections between that self-work and the mental health?
Yeah. So I always tell people, I think mental health from a lot of perspectives, and again, perception is everything to me, right? And everything I do, especially the racial justice work, but especially mental health, we're taught a lot of like very big falsehoods about like what it looks like, what it is. People will tell you like, go exercise and like, you won't be depressed anymore. And like, there are variations, right? Like exercise can help certain illnesses, but like at the end of the day, if you have a disorder and it's a lifelong disorder, you have to learn how to cope with it. Because like people will give you quick fixes. People will tell you all these things. But at the end of the day, right, if you have an anxiety disorder, you're probably going to have that most of your life if it's a lifetime disorder. Now, people do have like pieces where they can have it for a short time. Mental health is very varying. But for people who have like disorders that run in their families, especially, it's something that you have to learn how to cope with. And I think for me, it's been a really long journey of going from the point where I used to be like, oh, I am depression, I hate life, and all these other things, to being like, I have an anxiety disorder. And like, sometimes it makes me really crazy. Some days really suck, but like, it's there. And like, at the end of the day, it's not gonna disappear. I can alleviate it, but it's still gonna be there. And I'm gonna be able to feel that for probably the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so I think learning to accept that and utilize it to the best ability has been a really beautiful and hard process. Like today's been hard. I haven't been great on myself with my anxiety, but trying to basically recategorize it. This guy online, and I wish I could remember his name, but he basically said that people with anxiety disorders are basically always going, right? They're always moving.
I'm in that category. So
I relate
100%.
Yeah, you're super aware.
Yeah.
Everything. And he explained that when you're sitting down in a room and you're feeling like everything is racing, if you can learn how to take that anxiety and trick it into being excitement, because anxiety and excitement are so close together, you can really get your life moving. And like, instead of being anxious all day, if you just make yourself say like, I'm not anxious, I'm excited, like I'm hyped, this is the best thing in my life. Then like you can learn, it doesn't work all the time, but like I think just like learning how to refocus the way that we view our mental illnesses is such a useful tool, because now some days I really am like, okay, am I feeling anxious? No, I'm excited. That's what I am. I have so much in me trying to burst out that it's coming out in this way. So I'm going to turn it into excitement because I'm happy. I'm happy to feel these things.
Yeah.
And so that's like been, I think, a really big part for me and part of that reloving, relearning, trying to be more gentle, trying to give others more room as well, because I can be hard on other people and myself.
You know, I think part of, and I'll speak for myself, that one of the ways that I recognize that the excitement and training it into the excitement means that I am still always going, because I'm excited about this, so I'm gonna, you know, then I'm constantly doing, and part of you know, being able to address my anxiety also is about being able to sort of sit with this, like sit with being uncomfortable and kind of sit in the moment and kind of figuring things out. But you're doing so many things. So I'm wondering, like, how do you process all of these things, particularly, and make them connect, you know, for yourself, and like the racial justice, the mental health, the you know, your programs, your artwork, your fashion design, all these
things? Yeah, this is such a great question. I'm loving this. I think it's like a really important thing for me that I've been learning. Like when I first, for example, I've done politics work all my life. I always tell people I was born with a campaign sign. My mom used to work for big Republicans, and then she became a Democrat. It was a whole thing. And so she like became like one of these big Democratic like organizers in Texas. She helped like bring Obama to Texas when he was running for the first time. So she always had me with her at these events, and she would tell me like, okay, go like make sure people sign in, go do these little things. And so over time, I just became very used to that political environment. But I think as I got older, after I was in college, I did some really cool internships. I got to do some good work. I did the NAACP organizing stuff at my campus at GW. And then I realized that in my head, I think I felt like I couldn't do both the artsy stuff and the political stuff to the same extent. I started feeling like, okay, I can't like start this fashion line and like be out here like having people half naked and out for the front line and then like go talk to like campaign candidates the next day. But then I realized it's such a false presentation. It's a false duality, right? When you go to these political events, if you go to enough of them, you hear these people use all kinds of words, right? Like Donna Brazile is one of my favorite human beings, but that woman curses more than any person I've ever known in my life.
Yes, right.
I thought we had to be presentable in these places, you know, because I went, you know, when I was a kid, people knew, okay, she's younger, like, you know, don't use these certain words. But when I got older and it was just me like running my own stuff and like dealing with candidates, nobody had to monitor themselves anymore. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I think especially as Black people, we're not given the room to have duality, right? To be able to do these things. And I realized there's a connection, right? All things are political. Everything. Yeah. Everything is political. Anybody can argue with me about this any day of the week. Everything is about race. Everything is political because the world has made it so. But if that's the case, there's a connecting line between everything. So when I go to my fashion work, I can easily pick out, okay, I can tell like these brands are being stolen from because they're run by Black women, Black trans women. These models aren't being picked because they look a certain way. Like those things are very inherently political. When I go to my regular art stuff, like who are the artists that we're learning about growing up? We're learning about white male cis artists. We're not learning about anybody else. Yeah. If you go to, again, to the political side, like who are the candidates that do the best? Like when does a woman that looks like Stacey Abrams get elected to a large scale office? Mm-hmm. So like, all of these things are so deeply connected, and like you can connect fashion to politics because clothing is a big piece of, you know, perception and arts perception. It all relates back to perception at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think once I figured that out, I was like, I don't have to pick anything because these are all pieces of who I am. And like, for me, it comes so easily. Like I can't, and it's funny because I used to get in trouble for this in school because they'd be like, you have to pick a career, pick this, pick that. And I realized I can't. Like if I just did political stuff and I didn't do any fashion or art stuff, I would be unhappy. Yeah. I would be inherently upset. I would feel like part of me is missing. If I just did art and fashion stuff, I would feel like part of me is missing. So being able to kind of exercise, I think the way in which I push like Black radicalism, Black joy in those two spheres works for me because I need both different outlets because they're both equally important. I think all of it's just as important as the other, but they do very different things. Yeah. And so they're necessary for me to be able to like feel fulfilled and like at peace with what I am and who I am.
Wow. Okay. So this is, oh my gosh, I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I'm learning so much from you. Okay. So let's talk specifically about your work in racial justice. And I know that you have these, like you do these systemic racism training. So can you talk a little bit about that and what got you started in that and how, so what are your focal points when you do those trainings?
Yeah, so my mom always joked that I should be a professor because I like to talk to people. I've been told it too many times actually, which is sad. I'm always like, never, I would never teach people. But then I do like free lectures for fun. So it doesn't match up. The math is not mathing, as they say. So last year, right at like the heat of like the rise of like the global Black, I think, recognition, like George Floyd, like things being talked about, Black Lives Matter blowing back up. People on the internet, because we were stuck at home in the pandemic, so I had friends and family that were like, why would you say defund the police? And like, for me myself, I am now an abolitionist, but it's taken me a very long time to get here. Like, I wouldn't call myself an abolitionist a year ago. I wouldn't have done that because I just didn't feel like I understood all of it. I think I have a lot, and everybody has a lot of internalized like capitalist views and like other things that have been taught to us, and they're reinforced everywhere we look. So it's really hard to be able to like move those aside. But after talking with some folks, I realized, I was like, defunding the police is great. I was like, this is what it means. And as soon as my brain caught on to that, and people around me were like, no, like the police are great. I was like, I'm just gonna go research this. So I spent like 2 days just like deep diving into like, how are the police formed? How have they been functioning? Like, what do they do? How do these pieces work together? What would defunding the police help? How do you live in a society without police? Like all these different pieces. And then people online, when I was arguing with them, were like, I still don't get it. So I was like, forget it. I was like, I'm just gonna host a Zoom class and you guys can ask questions. I'm gonna give a presentation, you can ask questions. So I started I just put defunding the police, because I was like, people need to deconstruct this. And I had like a whole bunch of people hop on and it got shared all over the place. So I like—
Wait, did you do it on, like on TikTok? Well, how did you do it? Like on
TikTok? Zoom?
Zoom, okay. Zoom
streamed to Facebook, and then I also put it on YouTube.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Nice.
And I went on Facebook and I had people sending me the message like, oh, I watched your class. Like, I get it now. And I was like, who are you? How did you do this? At this time period where I had like nothing to do, basically, because, you know, school had ended, I was at home, I was stuck in a house with like my whole family, which was chaotic for me. I love them, but like my brain is overwhelmed 95% of the time. And so adding 4 very loud people that all have their own personalities was just like, And so I was like, I'm going to do these classes and I'm just going to do them every few weeks. And I'm going to just teach people about these topics. And so that's how it started. I ended up transitioning, I think in November, to doing like a lot of one-on-one sessions, well, October before the election. But I'm relaunching the class actually next week.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be releasing all the new topics, all the new dates.
Please, please, please. I would love to, you know, work, you know more, and, you know, also I just launched yesterday. We launched a Centering Black Women Network on Facebook. So this will be a place for you to showcase your work and let people know about things that you're doing and all these things. And it's, you know, by and for Black women. So Absolutely. Yes. And so 100%, you know, I think this, your workshops would be a great place to, you know, to talk about that and share that with other folks, you know.
Yes, send that to me. I love it.
Yeah. Okay, so I have 3 more questions. All right, so the first one is, and you talked a little bit about this, like this time frame of like George Floyd and sort of this sort of reemergence of, you know, the focus on racial justice and addressing anti-Blackness. But, you know, it's been a little bit over a year since George Floyd was assassinated. And one question that I've been asking folks is, if you think about your life in this past year, what do you think that you've learned and how do you think you've changed?
I will say I've become much more radical. I ended up being like reconnected to a lot of really great people. So I'll give like a tiny quick backstory. After 2018, I got the NAACP award for National College Organizer from the NAACP for the work I did for GW, for basically trying to push colleges to address racial biases, racism happening in dorm rooms and classrooms. But from that, right, came some nasty attacks. Some alt-right groups got my information. Some other Black conservatives got my information, and I ended up just being in a place where I was being attacked from a lot of different angles. And so I backed away. I don't want this, right? Like, this is not great. Like, my own people are sending me crazy messages threatening me. And people on my campus were threatening me, and it just became like a very frustrating space. So I transferred schools and I was like, I'm done with politics for a minute, which was the biggest lie in my life. But I was like, I'm done with anything in relation to this, all this stuff. And I'm just gonna take care of myself because like, I can't. Now, given who I am as a person, that was never going to work. And I realized that, because every time something bad happens, it just itches at my soul and I have to do something about it. Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse. Cause like, always see what's wrong in a situation. Almost 95% of the time when something happens, I can see all the racial justice lenses that are pieces of it and other pieces. And so after all of that, I think last year really kind of gave me the launching pad to like push myself back on a better scale. I think on a healthier scale and in like a more nuanced space. Cause before, like I said, I would call myself a political consultant. I had different terms for myself. Yeah. When I realized like what matters to me is racial justice and like being like an educator, which I also, it took me a while to allow myself to call myself that, but I had to learn from some people. It just gave me the space, I think, to do what I wanted to do. And I feel so much better because I'm able to articulate what I mean in more of a nuanced way. I'm able to have a better lens. I think things being virtual was also like kind of a great thing in a way, because it just really helped utilize access for people. And so for me, it radicalized me. The last year has given me so much more insight. My opinions have been changed on things, right? I can fully tell you all the nuances now of like why we don't need prisons. I couldn't do that a year ago. And I just feel so much more of myself and in my own in the last year than I think I ever have before. So it did a lot of wonderful wonders for me in that aspect.
Wow. Oh my God, that's so beautiful. And that's so good to hear and know. Okay, so I feel like you answered those two questions in one, in that answer, which was a beautiful answer. So this last one is really about what it is that you want people to know about what it means, like what it means to do racial justice today and in this society. Like, what do you think your work means?
Yeah. So I guess two pieces from that, a quote that I am like, I need to edit on my website, because it's something that I started saying a lot after I realized that the reason why people weren't accepting and being able to deal with a lot of things that were happening last year, especially white populations, but especially a lot of non-Black populations generally, was because they didn't want to be uncomfortable. Yeah. And so at one point I realized the key to any social change, right, is getting uncomfortable. Like, whatever that means, I think it varies on the group. Number one important piece for white people, specifically, and something that has been like really wonderful. I'm working on a book with a bunch of people. I'm super excited about it. It's called Death to White Comfort. Mm-hmm. And like after last year, I realized people could talk about white fragility and all these other things. And I realized it's not the right lens. It's not white fragility necessarily. That's the problem, right? It's not like, it's not even just whiteness. It's white comfort, which weaponizes these things, because it puts the comfort of white people and the comfort of whiteness over everything else. Wow. And so when we're always uncomfortable, right? And we have to get uncomfortable to live and to succeed.
Yeah.
The other groups of people are always sitting comfortably. And so now that kind of the earth underneath them is being moved, they're not happy. And they're like, why should I do all these things? And that's why I'm like, we need to kill white comfort. It's the root of a lot of our problems, because it doesn't help. It contributes to us wanting to keep the status quo, right? Like at the end of the day, all these institutions are fake. They were all built not that long ago. Mm-hmm. They were all built within the last few generations for the most part. So why are we stuck to so many of them? Mm-hmm. Because of white comfort. Like it just...
That is mind blowing. I'm like, dang, that's so true. That so makes me mad.
Yeah. Like, why are y'all holding on to a building? Think about that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Kill it all. Death to that.
Yeah.
100%. Oh my gosh, thank you. Okay, I just wanted to just, before we end, I just want to tell you how tremendous, I really appreciate, the work that you're doing. You're such an inspiration, and I think I'm just so grateful that, you took the time to speak to us and, so we can learn about you. And so your website is ruthann.com.
ShopRuthAnn.com.
ShopRuthAnn.com. Okay.
I couldn't get RuthAnn.com. That's the code.
Oh, okay. So ShopRuthAnn.com. But also your work, because a lot of the things you were talking about incubating and all that, so people can find out more about that by just going to You're on Instagram. You're also...
Yeah. They can go to theabiola.com, which has... I'm updating it next week alongside all my other stuff. It's still up and running, and you can always email me from it. But that always has links to everything, so I try and revamp it as much as possible. It's a little bit outdated because I was waiting on some stuff, but that's like a deep connection to everything else I'm doing. So the new classes will be posted on there once I release the schedule. Hopefully by end of next week is my goal date. But yeah, everything can be found directly from there.